In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And we had a unique situation this week, didn't we, sir?
I would say quite, yeah.
Normally we record our podcast on Monday. It's a day that we agreed upon. When we were doing it in person, Monday was the day that I had the best out of my schedule with my things with my kids and whatnot. It's the best day you had out of your schedule with work.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the whole world went to crap because of at least our world, but true, the whole world, because of the pandemic and the spreading of this, contrary to what you may have heard from some people, very deadly and very contagious virus that is easily passed from person to person. It's not difficult to pass it. It is easy. And it started running rampant and closures were put in. But we still kept Monday because it was kind of traditional. It worked out for our schedules and whatnot.
Yeah.
And we had planned it. Our plan last week, as things were going through last week, last week on Monday, we recorded our podcast. We talked throughout the week because we talk on a regular basis, not like talk, but like typing things in the various typing stuff. It's
right.
Easier to do funny jokes in the typing things. It's actually become recently a goal of mine and Mike's wife to annoy Mike as much as possible with puns and dad jokes. Apparently he gets a kick out of those.
A little bit, yeah. It depends. My favorite ones are when you barrage me with a bunch of bad ones and then throw a really morbid one in there out of nowhere. Those are my favorites.
Well, that's the point is you or you set them up. Set the jokes up after a long period of time, or you act like you're going to set the joke up, but then you don't ever do the joke.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I hate those.
That was a good one, though, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah. I was in constant contact with your wife as I was doing that joke. She was giving me the feedback of like, oh, yeah, that was good. He's like, OMFG kind of thing going on. Right? I'm like, all right, cool. That's the whole point. Let's keep it going. So we're conspiring against you, sir. But that's
all good. We're all in good fun, right?
we talk regularly. We send messages back and forth. And our intention and goal was to do the podcast again on Monday, like we always do. And then some things happened over the weekend.
Yeah.
And as we've stressed many times on here, we try not to be too political. I'm sure most people who listen, most of them know us, but if there's anybody listening that doesn't know us, they can kind of already get what political lean we have, I think, to some extent.
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, it should be pretty obvious with some of the things that we have talked about that could be things that we've talked about that are political issues in modern day stuff, but shouldn't be political issues. We've mentioned that multiple times. And some of the things that happened over the weekend are a part of this things that are made into political issues nowadays that should not be political issues, but yet they have been. They've been politicized and they shouldn't be. So when the things happened over the weekend, which we will touch on in a minute, we were kind of like, okay, well, I was kind of like, okay, we need to address this now because we have seen throughout our lives as Xenials a few crises. We've heard about a lot of them. I mean, Pearl Harbor was drilled into our head, a bunch of different movies before we were alive, a really, really bad Michael Bay movie while we were alive. I mean, there was a point in Ben Affleck's career where, like, it's just really hard to watch him in anything because you knew he was going to cry. I mean, I was surprised watching him as Batfleck that he didn't cry at some point. I was waiting for it.
Really?
Because that was kind of his thing.
That's funny.
Armageddon, Harry, and he's crying. Pearl Harbor, he's crying.
I checked out of Pearl Harbor about halfway through.
Chasing Amy, he's crying. It's just I don't remember. Does he cry in Good Will Hunting? I've only seen like
no. Matt Damon cries. Matt Damon cries, but Ben Affleck does not cry.
Oh, so he let Matt do the crying that time. Okay.
Yeah.
Here, buddy. you know, this is your movie. You're the Goodwill Hunting. You get to do the crying. All right. I'll not cry this time. We had Pearl Harbor kind of drilled into us, especially because it was the impetus for the United States getting involved fully into World War II instead of just supplying arms, ammunition, fighter pilots, without people knowing about it, that kind of stuff, which is, that's what happened. In fact, that's in the movie Pearl Harbor. Ben Affleck's in England flying with the Royal Air Force without, anybody knowing about it. He's an American pilot. Wow, how at least there was some realism to that. The rest of the movie, totally not real at all. Pearl Harbor was kind of smashed into our heads. Vietnam, because many of our parents or their parents, whatever, depending on the ages, had dealt with Korea and Vietnam, both of them, because again, we had parents, aunts, uncles, that kind of thing that were involved in many of those. I know my dad was of age during the time of Vietnam, and mm-hmm. He didn't want to get drafted, so he actually tried to go enlist in the Air Force. And he had a high blood pressure problem, so high that the doctors weren't sure why he was still alive with the blood pressure that high.
Whoa.
And they put in his chart that he never had to worry about being enlisted because he was not medically able to go into the military. I had and then he had a friend who he had one friend who enlisted in the Air Force, and then another friend who for some reason decided to enlist in the Marines instead of going into the Army. I grew up on stories of some things that were told about being in Vietnam, some things that weren't told about being in Vietnam, and I understood as a kid there are some things that people will tell about being in wartime, some things they won't. These are all things that were, hearing about these events kind of shaped us as we grew up, hearing about these country spanning sometimes world spanning global events that changed the way the world was,
right?
And we can even look into our own lifetimes of things that happen. I mean, we grew up at the cusp of the end, I guess, better way to say it, of the Cold War. We watched the speech from Reagan to tear down the wall.
Yeah.
And watched that wall get torn down and people finally crossing over for the first time. David Hasselhoff, that guy's big in Germany. People love him there.
Yeah.
And it's possible his music helped bring down the wall. You never know. I remember marveling at the with our shared love of Metallica. Metallica's concert that they did, they were part of a big concert that happened in like an airfield in Russia. And there's just people as far as the eye can see when Russia opened up to actually have American bands go in and play there.
Wow.
And how world-changing that was to have Russia no longer be this existential threat. I mean, you grew up where, roughly around where we are currently living, but I grew up in the East Bay area, and there's the Port Chicago Naval Weapons Depot there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the five targets on the West Coast that Russia would have had targeted for ICBMs during the Cold War.
Whoa.
And I lived within 10 miles of that, of Port Chicago. So if anything had happened, I would have been dust, man.
Holy smokes.
And you grew up living down there, knowing if your parents at least were in the know of things, you kind of knew, because there had been back in like the 1940s or so, 1930s, 1940s, may have been longer. I'd have to do the research. There was actually a munition ship that exploded at Port Chicago, and 5-6 miles away, it destroyed windows and houses and stuff. It was such a big explosion. Like all of the ammunition that was on the ship just went boom. Somebody was doing something wrong. And, The people doing the loading and the unloading weren't trained well enough. Most of them, sadly, minorities at the time, and they weren't given the proper training because they weren't thought of as real people that needed the proper training. If they got hurt or killed, didn't matter. They just replaced them with another. Jeez. Beautiful time in our country. That was just a single ship exploding. If the nuke had hit there, and it was, we would have, again, it would have just been a flashlight to the West. And, the scene from, from Terminator 2, where Sarah Connor's holding onto the chain link fence and she's just turned into a skeleton. I mean, that's basically what it would have been like if that happened. I remember growing up under the constant fear of that. I remember grandparents telling me the constant fear they grew up with in during the earlier years of the Cold War of doing bombing drills in their schools. Where, like, now wow. We do, like, fire drills, and we have to do, of course, now we have to do active shooter drills in our schools for kids.
Yeah.
Back then, they did bombing drills, and their solution for the bombing drills was to have kids climb under their desks.
Yep.
Like, that was going to do anything.
Yep.
At all. It was just to placate people. But,
oh, totally. Duck and cover, man.
These are kind of these are all world-changing events that have had huge effect on us. We were talking about it earlier. In many ways, even though it's a smaller event, Columbine had some huge effect on things. We can even go into what happened in Ruby Ridge and Branch Davidian in Waco, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But those are small things in comparison, I think, to something like the Cold War, which was, again, overarching for decades and overarching our childhood. I mean, anytime you picked up a movie or watched a movie when we were younger, the bad guys were always Russian, or if not Russian, they were Eastern European, part of the Soviet bloc.
Either that, or well, there were Russians, or there were some Middle Eastern ones too. Like every once in a while, you'd see those actually quite a bit. Like,
those came more prevalent during the 90s.
Yes.
When the Middle East became the kind of the military thing that was more of the attention being paid, especially as the Cold War ended. And it's fun. I mean, again, we've referenced this movie so many times. I love to reference it because I did see it at the drive-in. Uh-huh. So I feel so special for having seen it at the drive-in. Uh-huh. But during that time, you have Rambo 3, where Rambo goes and works with basically the beginnings of I can't even think of the word now. What is it? Tell me, Mike. The people responsible for 9/11.
Al-Qaeda?
I'm not even thinking of their group.
Al-Qaeda?
Huh? Yes. You're looking at the beginnings of Al-Qaeda there because it's actually the Afghanistan Mujahideen fighters that Rambo teams up with to fight off the Russians in that movie. So the Russians are the bad guys. The Afghanistani Mujahideen, which becomes Al-Qaeda eventually.
Yep.
Is who he's teamed with. And there's a dedication to them at the end of it. And it's like, that's how bad Russia was. That's how much our consciousness was shifted towards that during that time frame because of the looming specter of the Cold War. And then you have, of course, with the Al-Qaeda reference, you have 9/11, which for at least America, not necessarily the rest of the world, but at least America, stopped us all in our tracks.
Yeah.
You know, that's our moment for our generation. Like people in the older generation, they remember where they were when they heard that JFK died. The JFK was shot. Everybody from our generation remembers where we were when we found out about 9/11.
Yeah.
I remember where I was. I was at my parents' house. I was sleeping on a hide couch and my mother woke me up. I was supposed to go into work that day. I was sleeping on a hide couch. My mother woke me up and she's like, you need to watch this. And we turned on the TV and we turned it on like a minute before the second plane hit. So we're watching live as the second plane hit.
I was living in a house. My roommate and I was living up with my roommate's parents with one of my friend's parents. And I lived out in we temporarily had moved out to another place and we ended up, you know, moving back out and back in because rent was really weird, but at that time, I remember that I had slept in because it was no parents, so party nights and shit. And but I remember waking up, and I remember everything. The tone about the entire day was completely off, and I was supposed to go into clothes. We were working in the same store. I was supposed to go into clothes, and I remembered that the sky was gray. And I remembered noticing, like, I was living out in the Linda area. We were up in Yuba City, and the Linda area was like kind of like the ghetto of Marysville, sort of.
Yeah,
for anybody that's not.
It's the Poe area.
And I was living out in that area, and I remember driving up, and there was a, you know, there's an American flag pole. It's on the main stretch of road leading out to my street. And I remembered that it was at half mast, and I'm just like, I have – now, this is before, by the way, this is before internet news was a major breaking thing. This is 2001. Yeah. Like, you didn't get straight-ahead news, and you definitely didn't get it on time. It was secondary. The only time saw anything live was when Channel 3 was putting it up, or CNN. If you were watching that stuff live at that time, breaking news, that kind of stuff – that's what would happen. Like, you're interrupting Sally Jesse in the middle of the day, or USA Today is on, or USA Today, or you're waiting
till 6 o'clock when the news comes.
Yeah, out. Good Morning America or whatever. Like, that's what's happening. That's the only time you see that kind of stuff. So I had no clue what was going on, but I remember the flag was half mast and the sky was gray and everybody was quiet. And I had no clue until I was at the store.
Oh, was it me who told you?
Were we closing together that night?
I worked that day, yeah.
You did? Okay.
So it was probably me.
I think you might have, but no. I think Teresa was the mid that day.
Oh, okay. It was a midday.
Teresa was the mid that day, and she was like, dude, I was like, what? And she's like, go look. And we had the DirecTV display on, and it was playing on the DirecTV display. What had happened, and that's when I learned, and I was like, oh my God, what is going to happen? And so I watched the replay because I was asleep when all of it was going down, but I remember the entire mood of everyone that walked into that store was different, and I remember all the aftermath and everything.
It was her, because she wasn't a mid, she was closing that day. Oh. I would have been off that day.
Ah, okay.
Because I just checked what day of the week it was, because I don't remember. I didn't remember what day of the week it was. It was a Tuesday.
Yes.
And at that point, Tuesday was my Saturday.
Gotcha. Okay, so you would have been off. I was like, I don't remember working with you that day. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't
so. It wasn't me, so I didn't work that day.
I remember we had a long conversation about it the next time we met up for work, though. It was a big deal.
Yeah, which would have probably been Friday.
Yeah. Yep.
But no, I mean, that's the thing, is that's one of those moments that I was, you can call it lucky, you can call it unfortunate, I don't know what you'd call it, but I was able to, because of the fact that I woke up when I did, I saw in real time the second plane hitting.
Yeah.
And to be able to just think about that right now, it gives me goosebumps to know that I saw this happened as it was happening, as everybody else was watching. You know, at this point, so many people were tuned into their news watching this in horror, as the one building had already been hit and it was happening. And then you just see flying into frame this other plane, boom, right into the building. It's like, what the fuck did I just see?
Yeah, I remembered.
And
the biggest thing that hit me, like, obviously I didn't see it live or recorded. It doesn't matter. It happened on camera. We have the evidence. It was there. But
I mean, I disagree with you. Watching it happen live as it is happening, it's a different feeling if you know that you're watching a live feed and something happens.
Oh, I mean in the idea of the acceptance of it happening. The footage is there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, we're not talking about the acceptance of whether it happened or not. It happened.
Right.
What I'm talking about is just it is a visceral thing to see something like that happen live, as opposed to watching recording of it later. Even watching recording of it later, I can still put myself back at that exact moment of there was only one building hit, and then suddenly right before my eyes another building is hit, and it's just freaky. But the point I'm trying to get out with all this, of course, is that these are all things that have within some before our lifetime that we were told about, some within our lifetime. These are things that have shaped the way that we deal with the world, that have been an overarching theme for so many things. I mean, there are many people that look at life differently in America pre-9/11, post-9/11, and the post-9/11 world is talked about all the time, in that we've had to change the way America looks at the world, looks at itself, deals with everything. I mean, for those of us that are Xennials, we can remember the time when we could walk all the way to the door of a plane with somebody before they were able to get on a plane. There was some basic scanning of things, but there wasn't all of the scanning that they have to do now.
Yeah.
All of the safety checks that they have to do now.
Rock None the door, of that the existed. Wand, take off your watch, all that kind of, it wasn't a factor. It was nothing.
And the thing is, all of these things were changed as a result of trying to make things safer because of something that happened.
Right.
And there are people that railed against them, but eventually it's been accepted as this is the way that things have to be to make this work and to protect safety. And 9/11 is kind of the big event of that, especially for America. America is very America-centric. We worry so much about America and don't necessarily worry about other countries unless they're doing something that ticks us off or costs us money. The rest of the time, we just kind of stay. We if something happens to America, we look at that as like the biggest atrocity ever. If it happens to a different country, yeah, but it's not America. Were there Americans that it happened to there? You know, like it's the whole continent of Africa. Right?
Right.
People dying in Africa on a regular basis because of various warlords that are taking over different areas and killing people as a result. But you have, you know, a couple of Americans die there and oh my God, it's a shitstorm. You know, three to four Americans, they die there and whoa, this is huge. How can this ever happen? How is this allowed to happen? Sorry, that's almost teetering on the edge of political, but anyway, my point being, we worry very much about what happens in our own country and how important that is to us, and that's going to lead us into the next discussion. But first, before we get to that next part of the discussion,
okay,
and we'll do that after the break. I want to take about I'm going to give you a little bit of time here, sir, because
thank you.
It was a decision because of what happened over the weekend.
Yeah,
to not have our podcast on Monday because there were certain developments that we will talk about that happened, and we kind of wanted to see when I suggested, okay, I kind of want to talk about this as the subject for the podcast. That was part of our conversation after everything kind of started happening beginning into the weekend and then through the weekend.
Yeah.
And Mike says, I like that idea. I can deal with that idea, but I think we should not do the podcast on Monday. I think we should wait till Wednesday because I think we should see how things play out through, you know, beyond the weekend. I want to see what happens.
Yeah.
See what else we can, you know, if we go Monday, we may go too soon. And by the time Thursday comes around, when the podcast comes out, stuff might have happened on Tuesday and Wednesday. And if we're going to be topical about a subject like this, maybe best to wait till the last minute possible to do the podcast.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, okay, because Mike still needs time to edit, make sure he gets out all the weird noises that I make.
Yep.
And the occasional flatulence.
Those are tough.
Especially mine. I can rip it. But the point being, he needs time to still be able to make this a presentable product. So, you know, we waited till as long as we possibly could to see what else happened. Yeah. Well, something else totally unrelated happened instead.
Yeah. There was something that we didn't expect, and I'm actually kind of – I'm not glad that it happened, but I am glad that we could talk about it because it's something that's very near and dear to me.
It was fortuitous that we waited so that we could address this as quickly as possible because of the fact that we've talked many times on here about – various celebrities and their death. We did a whole episode on Kobe Bryant, which is funny because neither one of us are huge basketball fans,
right?
But we still did a whole episode on him because of the cultural impact of his life and of his death. But we also try to make sure that we talk about the celebrities that are near and dear to our own hearts, that are influences for us, that are people that, even though we've maybe never met any of these people, which we really haven't met much in the way of celebrities, they spoke to us and they helped shape who we are. Mm-hmm. And of course, anybody that's a fan of hard rock or basically any music where a guitar is used prominently, probably heard the news yesterday, Eddie Van Halen finally lost his battle to cancer. He had been battling it for many, many years. Throat cancer, he claimed, from a metal guitar pick that he used to use and hold between his teeth. But he was also an avid smoker.
He was also a huge smoker.
there's that. But it had finally, apparently from what I read about it, it finally metastasized to his brain. And here's the thing. Once cancer gets into the brain, once it metastasizes, you're not in good shape. I mean, that's pretty well, I hate to be morbid about it, but I'm one of those people that kind of, you accept the things that are coming at you. If your cancer metastasizes, you better start checking the days off the calendar, because that means that your time is limited. I mean, our time is always limited. We can walk out the front door and die in the next moment. But with something like that, you kind of know this will be the thing that kills me. It may take a while to do it, but this is going to be the thing that kills me. And then when it goes to the brain, that's kind of even worse. That's like the clock is ticking a lot faster.
Yeah.
But he was surrounded by his family. His brother was there. His son was there. But
I believe Valerie was there as well.
That was a
surprising bit of information.
Like most people, he was a very layered individual. There are many people who report how great a guy he was. There are many people who report how much of an asshole he was. That's pretty much most people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure that even though they weren't together anymore, there was at least enough good feeling there to be there with him at the end.
And it's not just the fact that they had a son together either. I think that they were in constant close contact, even though the marriage itself didn't work. I'm pretty sure that they both raised that kid together, whether or not they were a couple, you know,
they were probably still good with each other. You know,
I believe they very much were. Otherwise, to be completely honest, she probably wouldn't have been there. Let's be frank on that. Which goes to show you that, you know, just because a marriage doesn't work doesn't mean that two people can't raise a kid either. You know, I think that that's a very important, thing to take away from that.
If they focus on the correct thing, which is the kid and not themselves, it can work.
Yeah.
But I know this was especially difficult for you. I mean, the second I heard the news, my first thought was to reach out to you, because I remember there was a very short time where Mike was a roommate of mine and my wife's. Me and my wife were married. In fact, right before we were married.
Yep.
And Mike was our roommate. We basically brought him in because we only made enough money to rent a one bedroom apartment, and the one bedroom apartments, while only having one bedroom, also had a really small kitchen and no real good amenities. The two bedroom apartment had a balcony, had bigger closets, had actually a really nice setup. And the bigger bedroom was bigger than the one bedroom apartment was. The other bedroom was about the same size as the one bedroom apartment bedroom. Mm-hmm. So like, we wanted a two bedroom cause it was way nicer.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't let us do it cause we didn't make enough money. So we brought Mike in to move in with us cause that brought the money up enough, and he got the one bedroom, which, for full disclosure, he brought what are those damn beds?
A futon.
The futons. He brought a futon for him to sleep on in his room. It never got put together. He just threw the mattress on the floor and slept on the floor. This was Mike's.
What was I like? 19.
Yeah, this was Mike's young bachelor days.
Yeah, this was. Yeah, I was not. I definitely didn't have my shit together at all. You could still argue that I don't. Let's be real, but
no, that's what you have a wife for.
She keeps me in check, man. She makes sure that. She helps make my life simpler.
She was around then. She actually worked at the same place that we worked at then, but they weren't together then.
Nope.
But anyway, what I was getting to is, when we all moved into this place together, one of the first things we found out was that Mike had a guitar and played guitar. I had a guitar and played guitar.
Yep.
That was the last time in my life that I was maybe as good, if not maybe a tiny bit better at playing the guitar than Mike.
It's possible. I'd been very passively doing it over the... I mean, I'd gotten my first guitar when I was like 16, and I was kind of passive, but I was really, really into it. And then I learned how to record, and then I was all over recording a guitar.
I'm just saying that to illustrate the fact that there was one point in time that I could say, hey, I knew a little bit more than Mike about guitars. I taught him a little bit of something about guitars.
You did teach me what the pentatonic scale was, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Like specifically.
And then after that, Mike just kept moving in leaps and bounds, and I kept playing the same song for 20 years. So literally the same song. I had written one song, and I kept playing that for 20 years. I'm still playing it occasionally because it's 20 years later. So, you know, these things happen. But I distinctly remember he had a guitar at that time.
Yep.
That the only thing I remember about it was that the artwork on it was an Eddie Van Halen style artwork, but I don't remember which one it was or if it was a exact Eddie Van Halen replica or just a similar looking style guitar.
Okay, so I have found a little bit of information on the guitar far after I traded it in for another type. So that is probably the biggest mistake I ever made.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I remember correctly, that was the worst mistake you ever made when it came to music.
Yeah.
Instruments, anyway. I had a similar one. I don't know if you remember. I had a really nice black Ibanez guitar at one point. It was one of those that actually had the triple humbucker pickups.
So ooh.
It was nice.
Damn.
Strat-style body, but it had the triple humbucker pickups.
Damn.
It was a beautiful guitar, and I traded it in for an Epiphone Special 2.
Whoops.
And I'm an idiot.
Well, I had one, the one that I had, and anybody who knows guitar are going to hear me, and they're going to want to choke me for this. But it was, I was a kid. I didn't know what it was, and I know my dad was sorely disappointed in what I had done, but I also didn't know what I had. So essentially, the guitar I traded in for, the first thing I'm going to say, the guitar that I traded in for was a black Ibanez style, but it was a Charvel, but it was a Jackson Charvel. I wanted to say it was, I'm not sure if it was a Chinese model or not. I think it might have even been a Japanese model, but it was Jackson before Fender purchased them. And now Fender has since purchased Jackson, and they still make decent stuff. They've actually got some Iron Maiden signature Strat style knockoffs that are dope as hell. The one that I purchased for, the one I traded for, was a Jackson Charvel. It's called an HSH configuration. So it's got the pick guard like a Strat. It's a little bit sharper on the body. And it has a single coil in the middle and then a humbucker on either side. Right? Humbucker bridge, humbucker neck, single coil in the middle, five-way switch. With a Floyd Rose bridge on it, and that was my mistake. The Floyd Rose bridge that was on that bastard, I hated until I traded it in eventually for Les Paul, and since then I've been solid bridge, basically Les Paul's forever. The guitar that I had traded in order to get this guitar was, it was white on one side. If you were looking at the body itself, like as you were looking at it, it had a natural wood satin finish neck, like a maple neck with a rosewood, a dark rosewood. It might have been ebony, shark tooth inlay, ebony fretboard. Black on one side, if it's vertical, it's black on the left side if you're looking at it from the front. Sorry, white on the top, black on the bottom. And then a big orange, ugly-ass road cone orange Thunderbolt right in the middle of it. And it had a Kaler bridge on it. It was an HSH configuration. No, it was an SSH. So it was single coil in the neck and in the middle and a humbucker on the end. I believe it wasn't active. And that was half the reason why I went after the other one, because it was active. So it had like louder pickups on it. But, it turns out I found out that that guitar was a Charvel San Dimas. And I didn't know at the time what that meant. And now I'm looking for the Charvel San Dimas, and they're going for like $1,200, $1,300, and they're no longer made. I feel like a dumbass.
I get you on that.
And
thinking back as you're describing it, I was wrong with my pickup configuration. I told you.
Oh,
it
yeah.
Was humbucker. It was humbucker, single humbucker.
Single humbucker. So, yeah, that's pretty common with a Strat style guitar. Triple humbucker is possible, but most of the time. Most of the time it's a Gibson if you're doing a triple hum, but yeah, I totally get a lot of people mistake those two. But that being said, one of the big things that was about that guitar, the reason why that guitar was picked up, my dad purchased that guitar for me when I was 16. It was a 16th birthday present. And it was after he had introduced to me the original David Lee Roth era Van Halen. And I was like super into it, right?
Yeah.
One of the things he gave to me along with that was like Van Halen 1 on CD, the record, original from the tapes on CD. It was like the highest quality version you could get aside from an actual like vinyl record back in the day. It was the mid-90s, like, you know, 96, 97. Nobody fucking knew like how much better vinyl really was. Like the argument of vinyl wasn't really around until like the early mid-2000s about it being better sounding, quote unquote.
Well, I mean, I disagree. There were a few bands that were arguing it, specifically Pearl Jam, who released all their albums after Versus.
Right.
They released as vinyl albums as well as cassette and CD form. And interestingly, their CD books after that were reminiscent of vinyl albums as opposed to being the standard jewel case.
So they were really trying to bring that back home. And I bet you they were partially responsible for the resurgence in vinyl that happened in the mid-2000s. It's still been going on for the last 15 years.
Yeah, no, they would have been one of the bands, I'm sure, that was involved in that. I mean, I remember getting the Vitalogy album, and that was just like, this is like an old record album setup. Yeah. So, but anyway.
You
got this Van Halen.
So that was not the first album from Van Halen I had gotten, though. For like my 14th birthday, a friend of mine bought the Balance album because I told him I really liked Van Halen. And they bought me the Balance album. It was the first album of Van Halen I'd had. Aside from that, I'd been listening to them on the radio whenever they came on the radio. And I listened to that album from front to back all of the time. I loved it.
And that was on CD, right?
Balance was on CD. Come to think of it, I actually had more recently been listening to it like earlier this year. I had no idea what was going on about this. This is way before we had gotten the news. But I had been listening to the Balance album, and it turns out that I had found out that that was the last album that was done with Sammy Hagar. They were already on the way out. They finished the album. One of the songs on that album was one of my favorite ones. It's called Don't Tell Me What Love Can Do. And it is simultaneously about the band breaking up, that incarnation of the band breaking up due to differences, and Kurt Cobain's suicide.
Wow.
Simultaneously. It actually originally was about it's crazy because the song flips from a positive spiritual religious mindset to completely turning it on its head because of how negative and toxic love can be. And it turns it into this, it's crazy. It's so, it flips itself on. It's like, that's the twist of the bridge. Is it turns it completely into what toxic love itself is and is capable of doing, and how it's so crazy.
I'm gonna have to listen to it then, because I will admit I'm the outlier when it came to Van Halen music.
Yeah.
Beyond Hot for Teacher, which the only time I like that really is in the movie Varsity Blues. just because it's a great scene. It's a tan, motherfucking tan. But I actually liked the Gary Cherone era, so I'm the weird one.
VH3. There was I'll be real. There's a couple of good songs on that. I like him. It's still the band. It's still the band being the band. And to be completely honest, Extreme is fucking stellar. I love that band. And when I heard that Gary Cherone was singing for Van Halen, I was like, this is a match made in heaven, man. Like,
yeah, I mean,
and then the album came out and you're like, oh, it kind of fell flat. Like, there were a couple of good ones on there, but the album overall was really boring.
Yeah.
It just was. But, it's one of those things.
This guitar, your dad bought it for you as a kind of style of a Van Halen style guitar.
Yeah.
Right. That was kind of the point of it, is it was like what he could find as something that was close to.
Yeah, the closest thing that was virtuosic. It's got all these knobs and switches, and I could come up all these crazy-ass sounds, flipping phase and all this crazy. Like, it's like half Jimmy Page, half Van Halen. capable, right? And Van Halen himself, he had noted Jimmy Page as one of the greatest influences for him. To be completely honest, the way that Eddie had learned how to hammer was from Jimmy Page. Jimmy Page doing his hammering with two fingers on one hand, Eddie was like, I like that. That's really cool. What if I were to move the root note? So instead of taking just his ring finger and his index finger and hammering over an open string like Jimmy Page was doing, he was like, what if I use my index finger as the root and I move the index finger up and down, and then I use my ring finger on the left hand and my middle finger on the right hand, and I hammer notes down the string and I move the strings down to what it is, to what I'm doing. And now this guy's doing, like, when you listen to Eruption, the familiar portion of it, that major scale Baroque, scale Baroque ascent, that is because that is the signature maneuver that everybody's like, it blew everyone's fucking mind because nobody else had thought, wait, move the root note and create chords in that harmony rather than just sitting there and farting around with two strings. And then people start doing, you know, you've got sweeping and then like scales where you got Yngwie Malmsteen is taking that to another degree. But it wasn't until Eddie Van Halen took the basic rule of hammer pull and moved it up and down the neck. That is the root of virtuosic guitar playing. After that, everybody in the 80s, and Eddie was doing it in 77. Like, everybody in the 80s is like, fuck, how can we do this all over the place? And then you've got guys like CeCe DeVille doing, you know, combinations of that, blues licks. But other guys that were around the same time, when you're looking at guys like Randy Rhoads, who was in Quiet Riot and then obviously did everything with Ozzy Osbourne, and anybody else that was doing that stuff, most of them were pickers. Most of them were doing some variants of Eric Clapton slow hand stuff, except with like lightning fast right hand. And same with like guys like Zakk Wylde. He's still doing just lightning picking and not doing a lot of hammering. He knows how. He can pull that shit off like nobody's business. Dimebag Darrell was doing it too. He was doing double-handed hammering, that kind of stuff. But the guitar virtuosity is rooted in the rules, that the rule book that Eddie Van Halen wrote for every virtuosic guitar player since he's existed, since he came on the scene.
I'm saying this right now.
Yeah.
You need to do a Ruling Note episode about this.
You know what? I think I am. As a matter of fact, I might as well say what I'm going to do here on the podcast. I am going to do a Ruling Note thing, but I have been really racking my brain around this, and I decided to do something. And I think, let me announce this and then we'll go to break, because I want to talk about what we came to talk about as well. But so here's the thing. Me, I feel like I myself am a very solid rhythm guitar player, but I am extremely okay at playing lead guitar. I have my quirks in my personality, but I feel like I've never had the patience to form the dexterity. And Eddie Van Halen was a hero of mine because he took the rules that I have stuck to and completely fucking broke them. One of the things I always wanted to learn was the first time I had ever heard Eruption. I heard Eruption after I heard the entire Balance album. But ever since I had heard Eruption, it was just something that just blew my fucking mind. And I never had the patience to sit and find out what it was. I learned the hammer-on part like everybody else did, but I never learned all of the phrasing and all the cool shit that he did from beginning through the middle up until you do the one hammering part. All those lightning blues licks that he was pulling off. And I really have thought about it. And one of the things I started doing was I looked up a lesson video because I was like, you know what? I want to try to do this. I want to figure it out. I really want to just push myself to learn this just in tribute and in reverence to Eddie. And so what I'm going to do on the Ruling Note video, I'm going to do something on Eddie and my history behind that, my personal history and my account of Eddie just as a distant fan. But I am actually challenging myself, and I'm going to do it on video. I'm challenging myself to learn how to play Eruption, and I'm going to record the process, like the progress itself. So day after day progress, I'm going to sit and I'm going to learn the licks. I have a strat, a Franken strat that I've built for myself. It's my custom piece that I am going to learn how to play Eruption on. And I'm going to document it, and then eventually I will do like a progress video that's like day one, day two, or week one, week two, week three, what have you, to show the progress in learning how to play that solo. But I will eventually learn how to play it all the way through, and when I'm done with it, I'll post the entire progress video up.
Well, I'm going to say this now. Crap. Now I have to watch one of your early note videos. I've been trying to avoid watching them. Good on you, man. I figured that I had a feeling that that was where you were going with it. And
yeah,
good on you. I can't wait to see the process. And again, doesn't matter how distant you are as a fan. You're a fan of this. This is somebody that inspired you, like he inspired so many others. I mean, you mentioned Dimebag in that. He was a huge inspiration for Dimebag. I admit, I am the world's... I'm. How do I say it the right way? I don't like the band Pantera. I have never liked the band Pantera, but they're still people. And Dimebag was such a huge fan and became friends with Eddie. You know about what happened when he died, right?
When Dimebag died? Yes, the Bumblebee is in the ground with Dime.
Yep.
Yeah, the Bumblebee is in there along with. As a matter of fact, Dime saw, I think the way that that came about was that Dime saw, they were on tour together. Yeah. They played a show together, and Dime's like, I fucking love that Bumblebee guitar. And Eddie was like, well, dude, I'll have a replica made for you so you can have one at home. And Dime was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And then Dime was shot. And Eddie was just like, you know what, dude? Dimebag wasn't original. He was one of a kind. And he said, an original deserves an original. And the Bumblebee, original Bumblebee, went in the grave with Dimebag as a gift.
Yep, laid in the Kiss coffin with him.
Yep, yeah.
So, all right, we'll take our break now. Now that we know that Mike's going to, I'm looking forward to the video of him working through it, because there's nothing funnier than watching somebody. Funnier, but also I think it can be inspirational when you start seeing them get better. But the first couple of times going through yeah, trying to play anything, it's like, okay, there's this one. Nope, damn, got to do it again. And unless you've done something like playing an instrument, you can't just move on to the next note. You have to go back and start the whole thing all over again, because you have to get the connection right. And yep, it's, you know, it's here it is. Nope. That's not it. Hold on. Let me try again. Here it is. Nope. Sorry. And it's funny, but again, it's also inspiring once you see the start in that, and then you start to see it getting working through it. It can be as inspiring as maybe, I won't go as far as say that you can inspire as many people as Eddie did, because that ain't happening yet.
So, oh, hell no.
It might one day, but at least it can inspire a few people to realize that even somebody who's had two different bands that have both recorded albums and has, you know, played on stage a bunch of times for both of these bands.
Yeah.
Even somebody that's had that experience, when learning something new on the guitar, it takes some time. It takes some fumbling.
Yeah.
It's looking like an idiot for a little while.
Yep.
before you're able to get it. And that can be inspiring to the people who try to play something on their guitar and they're like, oh man, I sound stupid. I can't get any of this. If you work, if you try, you can get to a point where you can be happy with what you're doing, with the sounds that you're making. But anyway, we're going to take our break now. And when we come back, we will talk about this. I don't want to go as far as to say this is close to what 9/11 was, because I don't want to say that. But at the same time, it kind of is. This thing that's going on in our world today and how exacerbated it was over this weekend. So we'll be back in just a minute.
All right. Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the show.
And we're back, everybody.
All right.
We are now into the part of the discussion where Mike has a little trepidation, because he knows me and he knows that sometimes I can rein things in really good and sometimes I have a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, and it's okay.
We're talking.
I do the same thing.
We're talking.
So.
Well, you're a little better at it than me because naturally you like to keep the peace a little more than me. I like to stir things up a little more.
Okay.
So, and that's, you know, just happens to be our nature. So if I like could, I was saying,
if I could say something beforehand, just in reference to the thing you said just before the break, I know what you mean as far as the, because I know what it's going to be, and we're going to talk about it in just a second. Like, we're going to say exactly what it is that we're talking about. But to be completely honest, I understand where you're coming from with the in regards to the similarities to 9/11 and a culture changing aspect of it. I think that's essentially what you're getting at. This is a major event that affects the entire country and affects all of us, and it is a turning point in all of our lives. Period. Very similar to how 9/11 was. Is it the same disaster? Absolutely not. And I'm not trying to. Neither one of us are trying to scale one against the other in that regard. But the similarities between the two of them in that they are major events that are changing the culture of the entire country right now and all of our lives specifically, is definitely something of note.
It is, and that's for us. And that's why I kind of highlighted the things that happened before we were alive.
Yeah.
Talked about things like World War II, Pearl Harbor. Talked about things like Korea, Vietnam, because there's so much culture around Vietnam, so much more than just the aspect of the conflict that was there. I won't say the word war because technically it was not a war. We never declared war on anybody.
Right.
So if you don't declare war on somebody, that's not technically a war. It is a conflict. That does not mean that the horrors of things don't happen there. It's just not technically classified that way.
Right.
But we, you know, and there was a few of those that we had. We had there was two different times in our lifetime that the United States invaded Iraq for something. One was before 9/11. One was after 9/11. And those are discussions for other times, because while those did happen, those were very, very small things that happened. As far as at least the first Gulf War was very small in its length of time. I mean, very, very small.
Yeah.
Considering.
Yeah.
The second time things ran a little bit longer, and there are still troops in some of the various countries that were there right after 9/11, you know, 20 years later, almost, there are still troops in some of those countries, still some of those conflicts not died down yet. The thing that 9/11 did and how it changed our society, like exactly like you were saying, this changed the way we did things. It changed the way we got on airplanes. It changed the way that we worried about safety and thought about our place in this world.
Yeah.
And obviously, the current crisis that we are all going through right now, we allude to it, we talk about it to an extent all the time, it is the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah.
What has happened during this is we have had scientists try to work through the problem, give guidelines of how to slow the spread of the disease. We've had basically everything in life at some point or another shut down. Some have opened back up. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, a week ago, we were discussing the schools reopening and the various things involved with the schools trying to reopen with their cohort schedule of 2 days a week and keeping the same groups together. And you already had kids in different schools that were testing positive and had to have the school shut back down. And so this has become our national kind of reality, especially because when you look at the numbers worldwide, because this isn't just a pandemic in the United States, this is a worldwide pandemic. But when you look at the numbers, the United States has more cases and more deaths in comparison to every other major country that has dealt with this. The only other country that I think comes close is maybe Brazil.
And, I think the United States. One of the statistics I had heard is that the United States houses like 5% of the world's population, and we're close to 20% of the cases.
Which is astronomical. We shouldn't have
mind blowing. We shouldn't have those kinds of numbers.
part of the problem has become, we are obviously we're in an election year. And again, this is where we're going to touch on the political a bit. And it's sad that we have to when it comes to something like a public health crisis. We've said these words before. Public health crises should not become political. However, this public health crisis in this year and in these times, in this political environment, it has become politicized. In the extent of you literally have one side of the political aisle that is, and let's be real here, we can do a nonpartisan discussion of how American politics work in the sense that when it comes to the majority elections, we're talking the presidential election and the majority of the major seats in the Senate and the House.
Yeah.
We are a two-party system, not what the forefathers envisioned at all. They did not want there to be a two-party system, but we are a two-party system. Any person that is running for president that is not either part of the Democratic Party or the let me rephrase, is not the nominee of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party for the presidential race, that they really don't have a chance, because the two party machines, Democratic Party machine, the Republican Party machine, they have so much wealth, so much power, so much influence that now other party candidates have won elections in smaller venues, cities, state legislature, sometimes even they'll pick up a House of Representatives seat, maybe even a Senate seat, depending on where they are, depending on what their party affiliation is. Bernie Sanders, probably one of the best examples of, while he has run for the Democratic nomination for president multiple times, I believe he's technically an independent when it comes to his, and he's one of those high profile kind of independents that you're going to find as far as being in the news.
Yeah.
People know who he is. I'm not picking him out because of any specific feelings towards him. I'm just saying if anybody's going to be well known, that's an independent in a prominent spot. That's a guy who
he is the Bernie most well known. Yeah, he is hands down the most well known independent politician today.
And,
period.
And by the way, I do want to say Larry David does an amazing impression of him, and they're related.
Yeah,
they're actually related to each other, which is, I mean, it makes sense. But anyway, for the most part, American politics are divided into these two camps. And there are people that waver around the middle, that'll jump from side to side, depending on what the issues are, who's being elected for the various things, whatever. This is a two-party system. That's the way that it is. That is the reality that is necessary to accept. I know there are people that don't like to hear that. They want to vote with their conscience. They want to do whatever. Fine. You can do what you want. Freedom to be able to vote is still, at this point, one of the luxuries of being an American.
Yeah.
We have the freedom to vote as we want to right now. But for the most part, we're dealing with this two-party system. And this public health crisis has become divided between these two parties in a way that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense in the sense that it's literally – I don't even know how to completely put this into words, because you have one party who is wanting to listen to doctors and listen to scientists. They want to take safety precautions of keeping things either shut down if the doctors are recommending them for them to be shut down, or reduce numbers for everything, making sure that people have appropriate distance between each other when they're out in public, and that they're using proper protection equipment, wearing masks where you go, washing your hands, wearing gloves if you feel the necessity to wear gloves, but at least if you're not going to wear the gloves, wash your hands regularly.
Yeah.
Wear the mask so that you don't have to worry about inhaling or exhaling any part of the virus, because the virus is airborne transmission, and it can even transmit beyond 6 feet, which is the at least minimum requirement that they're requesting that you do. So if you're going out in public, they're all that's being asked of you at this point is to wear masks, wash your hands regularly. This is, you're not being asked to, at random intervals in your day, hide under a desk because it's not going to protect you from a bomb. You're not being asked to remove your shoes and your belt and everything from your pockets and go through a 3D body scanner. You're not being asked to do this level of things. You're being asked to wear a mask, stay home as much as you can, wash your hands. This is what you're being asked, and you have what you would normally think is you'd have sensible people who want things to be okay who want to try to help make the situation better, who want to, like, back in World War II, we can go back to World War II, which wasn't one of our experiences, but it was one of the things that we heard about, you know, that we were taught. I remember interviewing one of my friends, like grandparents or great grandparents, who was actually in World War II, and his experiences in it. And the people at home during World War II, they were given rations. As in,
wow.
not like cans of rations, but they were, and we've discussed how canned rations, like Spam, yeah. helped yeah. Win the war. But they were given basically ration coupons to where they could only buy so much sugar a month. They had to donate basically whatever metal they could towards the war effort.
Yep. Yeah.
They had gas rations where they could only buy so much gas because it had mm-hmm. to go to the war effort.
Yep.
Now, admittedly, that's a war, and I understand that. But that's something that's, in my mind, far less tangible and far more restrictive on the people of America than a pandemic that's right here, right with us. We've seen celebrities that have tested positive for COVID-19 mm-hmm. and have had to go into quarantine. And they've gone to a full 14-day quarantine, gone through various medicational things, different medicational therapies that they were trying to do, because mm-hmm. we're not even a year into this pandemic. And the simple fact is this: quarantining, wearing the masks, slowing the spread of the disease, this is not to stop infection from happening completely, because that's not going to do that. This is to slow the infection rate. And the idea for slowing the infection rate is to not overtax hospitals when you do have people infected, so that hospitals can try to give them the care that they need to keep them alive through it. Because, yes, it is survivable, but it is also deadly and can kill you.
Yes.
The best way to be able to survive it is to get appropriate hospital care that is not overworked and underfunded. You need to be able to go into the hospital and get that care and not have the entire hospital full and turning people away because you've had an eruption of a super spreader event that has erupted this over this small group that suddenly floods the hospital and they don't have the resources. So by wearing the masks and slowing the spread, we not only conserve the resources and make sure the hospital is able to treat the people as they are getting sick, because let's face it, I mean, in the area that I live in, it's two small cities with a couple of outlying towns that are around it. There is one hospital between all of it. One hospital. That hospital does not have the capacity for even 1% of the population of this area. Even 1%. So, that's not just going to be the patients who might possibly get COVID-19. That's talking like anybody that's broken their leg has whatever other problems that they are filling that ER and that hospital with on a daily basis.
Yep.
They don't have enough rooms and beds for even 1% of the population, because typically they don't need it.
Right.
So you slow the virus down and make sure that the hospitals can handle it. The other reason you slow it down is so the scientists can take a look at this new virus that is infecting people and figure out, A, what it fully does. Because at first we only heard that it did damage to the lungs. Then news came out that it not only does damage to the lungs, but it gets into the blood vessels, does damage to the epithelial cells inside the blood vessels, which cause it causes basically a response in the body, inflammatory response in the body, which sends in white blood cells, mm-hmm. platelet cells, and suddenly you start having blood clots. And it, as it's doing this, yeah. it's damaging these cells in these veins and these arteries, especially in the veins that are leading away from all of the different organs.
Yep.
And it starts damaging the areas around the organs to where you start ending up with multiple organ failures.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're getting blood clots and damage to the fuel system of these organs. The entire fuel system is the circulatory system, the blood supply. So this virus does a double whammy. It hits your lungs and it hits your blood supply. And by doing that, it's damaging all of your organs. We didn't know that at first, because scientists didn't know that at first, because there weren't enough cases to study to see that this was the issue at first. They needed time.
Yeah.
How do you get time? You have people follow these various protocols to slow the spread of the virus.
Exactly.
That gives you time to figure out what it all does, how to combat it, which medications work best that don't kill people and make things even worse, like the anti-malaria medication, which didn't work and actually had bad side effects that could hurt people even more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing is, this is the quarantining, the masks, the social distancing. It's not about eradicating the virus or stopping it. It's about slowing it enough that science can catch up and find a way to fight it. They're not going to cure it, just like the flu isn't cured.
Right.
The flu is a distant relative of this virus. It's not cured, but we know how to fight it.
Well, if you're talking about the fact that it is a virus, that's about as close to the to the flu that it technically is.
Yes.
And it's a cold virus. It's actually a cold virus, yeah.
And I'm not trying to do the normal comparison of this is just like the flu. It is not.
No.
And part of the reason it's not, one, its genetic makeup is completely different.
Yeah.
But two, again, we have had decades and decades and decades of battling the flu. To where we do know how to handle the flu. Again, it's not comparing, not saying this is just like the flu and will be. It's just we do need more time to figure out what drug protocols work best, which drugs work best. There are some experimental antiviral drugs that are very possibly very useful in the treating of coronavirus. They are still experimental.
Yeah.
They are still going through their approval phases. Mm-hmm. And most Americans have no opportunity to get them at this point, partially because they still don't have enough evidence to know what the side effects are. And that's another thing we don't have enough evidence for yet. We don't even know the long-term effects of what COVID-19 can do to the body after it's done all these other things.
Right.
We don't know what's going to be the long term on that. And we won't, again, until we have more time. So we have these safety protocols in place. And this becomes politicized. You have, again, the one side, the one group of a political group that is wanting to follow the safety protocols, wanting to trust in the science. And again, what would seem like the logical thing to do. And normally you would have the other group that don't want to follow the protocols, don't want to follow the safety, mm-hmm. and that would be kind of the illogical group of society. And normally, especially back in the Cold War, we still had both political parties back then. We had the Republicans, we had the Democrats. They both were worried about Russia, okay?
Yep.
You have 9/11. George Bush the Younger was the president in 9/11. Republican president, I believe he had a Republican Congress at that point. And 9/11 happens, and you didn't see one group, one political party be like, oh no, we have to do all these things, and the other political party be like, no, we can't do all these things. I mean, like the whole idea of the NSA tapping your phones and listening to everything that you're saying on your phones.
Yeah.
That's all part of the Patriot Act,
mm-hmm.
which was enacted after that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. If the Patriot Act was really an issue that was not a bipartisan issue, not something that both parties kind of worked on together, then the Obama administration wouldn't have used the NSA tapping for the Patriot Act as much as it did to try to find and spy on terrorist action.
Right.
That was something that, while there are a lot of people that have issues with the things that the Patriot Act did, it was done during a Republican time in office. Say, when the Democrats had the time in office and had the control, they didn't undo all of that. Because it made sense in a post 9/11 world with the way our world was changed. It made sense to them at least, to have some of these safeguards and these things put into place. There are times before where the response to these major issues, like 9/11, like the Cold War, like Pearl Harbor, both political groups realized they needed to work together to make things be right. And normally the fringe people who don't want to follow the rules on this would be the fringe people who don't want to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason now, those fringe people that don't want to follow the rules are part of one of the political parties. And it culminated last week in the figurehead for the for this, the current president of the United States, who has, for some reason, even though he is the one who is supposed to be in charge of our pandemic response, has regularly undermined the idea of wearing masks, social distancing properly, even reporting the proper information about the seriousness of the virus back when he originally found out how serious it really was, underreporting it in his reasoning, trying not to cause undue panic. But I think helping to maybe establish this idea that people didn't need to wear masks as much and did not necessarily lead by example by wearing masks, taking the proper precautions, not having huge gatherings of people where no social distancing was happening, no masks were happening. This culminated last week, of course, in the president testing positive for COVID-19.
Right.
So we've, you know, Thursday night, it was found out that the president had tested positive for COVID-19, having regular tests done. Friday, he ended up having to go to Walter Reed Hospital in, where is that, Maryland, right? Bethesda, Maryland?
Bethesda, Maryland, yeah.
Yeah. And we'll not get into the various reports that come out from the doctors, because we can talk about the speculation of that for, you know, long time. But subsequently, multiple members of his political inner circle, people that work directly with him, his administration, started testing positive for COVID-19.
Yeah.
And all of them, a part of his group that regularly does not wear masks, mm-hmm. does not social distance. Mm-hmm. And it is being used by the political party as, at least had been used as, basically a political thing of, this group isn't going to follow these rules and restrictions and wear these masks. And the other, you know, it's become a political issue again. And it came to the head this week with the head of the political party, the head of this political movement, finally coming up and being diagnosed with this disease. I've seen many people post about the fact that they see it as ironic that this would happen to a political figure who downplayed the seriousness of the virus and refused to wear the masks, refused to have his people around him wear masks and have the proper social distancing, refused to have his not have his supporters wear masks and not encourage his supporters to wear masks, to disregard the scientific community. They say it's ironic that he showed up with a positive COVID-19 test. I don't say it's ironic. I say it's inevitable.
Yeah,
what this should show people is that these rules are in effect not for political gain of either side. These rules are in effect for the gain of the American people. This should never have been a political issue where you can literally look at one political party and say, those people don't wear masks. You can look at the other and say, those people do wear masks. This is Dr. Seuss level. Like,
right.
I mean, differences, and this shouldn't be for something that is a public health issue. This should not be a political issue. This should not fall down party lines. This should be an issue for America.
Right.
Not for Democrats or Republicans. And that's what we really want to get out here, is seeing the president of all people. This is a guy who is supposed to have the most secure and most safe setups of anybody here in America, right?
Right.
The highest levels of security.
Right.
And him and close to 20 other people around him are now positive for COVID-19.
Right. Exactly. I would, if I may, I would definitely
it really needs to be said that one of the worst parts about this is the perceived bounce back that is happening as well. There's also
That's part of the reason why we were waiting a little bit longer to do the show initially.
Yeah.
Was because we wanted to see what would happen. And
well, it's not over yet. That's the crazy part. This is the thing that people need to know and understand, and I think it's probably the most important part of this that I personally feel is the case. You need to understand, and anybody who's listening to this, if you're continuing to listen, we totally understand. Because it's kind of in everybody's faces right now. And I don't necessarily blame someone for not wanting to hear.
It is in everybody's faces, but it's something that's a necessity.
It's very important. Yeah, don't get me wrong. It is very important. But one of the things I think that we should, one of the points that we should really hang on here, if we're going to hang on to any point, is the fact that this takes a while it's not an instantaneous, you've got it for a few days and it's done, it's over. That's been proven time again to be absolutely vehemently false.
Well, and that's the biggest issue I mentioned before about celebrities that have had it and had to go through their 14 days of quarantine and have multiple issues getting through it. And now the president was given two different experimental medications, the type of medications that aren't available to everybody, that haven't been approved yet,
right,
that are still working through all of this. He received excellent free medical care, which is an amazing thing to have.
Yes.
Free medical care is a beautiful thing.
Yes.
But he went into the hospital on Friday and was back to the White House on Monday. And yeah, it's giving a false, it is currently giving a false image of what the true course of this disease is for people. And again, we don't know, because there is some, I don't want to get into the obfuscation too much, but there has been some of that when it comes to what the actual health things that have been happening with the president over the weekend. And, you know, we've heard multiple tales at different times. It becomes hard to trust what you hear when the story changes so often. And then when it's even admitted that some of the things were lies to try to make the situation sound better. But we are still looking at this point, there could still be much more involved with his health because of this, that it's not something that's over already. His experience with COVID-19 is not over already.
No.
There could be much more to this. And the point I'm trying to make is, and I think Mike is too here, this is, we need to see what's going on with him, and we need to realize, again, this is the most, in many ways, the most powerful man in the United States at this moment in time. This should be the most secure man in the United States.
Yeah.
And because of not following the protocols, not following the healthy things that are supposed to be being done to limit the spread of this virus, not only did he get it, but multiple people that were in direct contact with him and his various people got it. Now, he may not be the initial source. There may be somebody else, and they have not nailed down who the initial source is. But regardless, that's all it takes. No matter who you are, no matter what things you have going on in your life, that's all it takes is one person to be able to bring it into a group of people and spread it this quickly. And this is why, as much as it is an inconvenience to not have all the stores you want open, to not have all the restaurants you want open,
right,
to not be able to go get your hair did, to have to have your kids home from school because of the concerns of spreading this. I mean, I'm in a situation where I have a member of my family in my household that has literally every single possible factor that can make a COVID-19 diagnosis even worse, that can make her getting COVID-19 even worse. That, I mean, I'm pretty sure if she got it, she wouldn't live through it, because she has every risk factor possible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a person that's missing a lobe of her lung because she had cancer and had to have it removed.
Yeah.
Luckily, it took all the cancer, but still, we're talking major, major health problems that make this so much worse. And the thing is, what you're being asked to do by the scientific community is to put some of the things in your life on hold, reduce, pare down, and when you do go out, wear your mask, keep your hands washed, avoid large gatherings. This is all that's being asked of you. But it's been turned into a political tool to have two parties fight against each other when they should be coming together and trying to do the best thing for America, which is try to get us through this with less than 210,000 people dead. Yeah. And that's where some of the difference comes. Again, 9/11 was a tragic moment in our nation's history. 3,000 people roughly died in 9/11, and that is tragic, and we're told how much we need to remember that. Well, we've already lost 210,000 people to COVID-19 this year. And that's just from February to now.
Yeah.
210,000 people. And part of that because this has become a political issue and a divide where it's not something that should be a political issue. This is not something that we should be talking politics about. This is something that we should just know is best for America to try to keep us all healthy for as long as possible. And that's the thing is, as I'm watching this, I have my own feelings and my own issues with it based on my political feelings, and I'm not trying to I'm doing as best I can to rein those in and just have the realization that it shouldn't be something that's about politics. It shouldn't be something we're discussing in that way. It should be about taking care of public health and making us safer. But you know what's funny about it? I when people tell me they hate history, because people tell me often that they hate history, it's a boring thing. Do you like history, Mike? Did you like it in school?
I was pretty fascinated by history, personally. I always wanted to know what makes things work and why. Yeah, totally, right? I always wanted to know what made things work and why things were the way they were. That was kind of thing for me, but not a lot of people were. My friends were bored with it, man.
Most people are bored with history.
Yeah.
And I try to explain to them that history is very important because if you study enough history, you learn enough things. Mm-hmm. As is said famously in The Princess Bride, never start a land war with Asia. Well, if Hitler had paid enough attention to his history, he would have known what happened when Napoleon tried to invade Russia. You don't do it at any time, but you specifically don't do it in the wintertime because they live the wintertime.
Yep.
That's like King's Landing trying to invade the Wall at any point in time. If anybody's a Game of Thrones fan, that's a good reference.
Yeah, I am completely unaware of that.
It's just you just don't do it. You don't invade Russia. The cold is part of who they are, and you're not going to survive through the cold. Now, admittedly, I'm glad Hitler didn't pay attention to history because it helped him be defeated that much easier.
Right.
If he decided not to invade Russia, it would have been so much worse for the rest of the world.
Right.
But the point is, paying attention to history should be able to help us. And here, the funny thing is, we've dealt with a pandemic of this scale before. And that was with the Spanish flu. Funny enough, it was only called the Spanish flu because the only country that actually reported appropriate morbidity numbers, death numbers for the flu, that strain of the flu,
yeah,
was Spain. Every other major country was involved in World War I, and they didn't want to report the numbers of dead to demoralize people. Again, obfuscation.
Right.
Not giving all the proper details about these things. And what happened with it? It started to die down. It started to lull a little bit. Which, by the way, there were mandates back then for people to wear masks. Yes, back during the Spanish flu, Americans were told to wear masks in public to stop the spread.
We had the same argument that we had now.
Yeah, it started to die down, and what happened? People started going out without masks. They started having major gatherings, and it popped right back up, and they had a whole new set of stuff happening, whole new infection happening of it.
That's
the thing that we run the risk of here right now is to have the pandemic continue forward and not stop, not slow down, not be brought under control, because this has become an issue where, and when it comes to political issues, which is why you're always told not to talk politics, not to talk religion, when something like this becomes a political issue instead of a issue of public safety or a moral issue or any other issue like that you can discuss, once it becomes political, people hold on to it so hard and they refuse to give it up because politics can be so much of their identity. It's why it's too hard to talk about with people. They take it so seriously. It becomes so much part of their identity. And by doing this, by politicizing this, it's been made so much worse. So people, here's the thing. If you're listening to this, please wear your masks, wash your hands, keep your safe distance. Don't go to major gatherings. Sacrifice a short part of your life and the pieces here in this short part of your life, not doing all the things that you want to do right now so that you can have the rest of your life. And not only you, but so your neighbor can have the rest of your life. So the person that's grabbing fruit right next to you in the grocery store, they can have the rest of their life. Even if you don't know who they are, think about the fact that all of us deserve the chance to have the rest of our life. And by doing some small things now, we may be able to help that chance be more assured. That's what I'm saying at this point.
To be real, I mean, not to mention that the habit of wearing a mask during flu season is probably a really good idea. Like, if you really think about it, if you did this during cold and flu season, which we're just getting into on a regular basis, do you realize how much easier it would be on everyone?
Yeah, it would probably reduce the numbers in cold and flu season.
Yeah.
Exceptionally so.
And it's not going to make you weak, because what's going to happen is what a lot of people don't realize, and this is a point that I want to touch before we close out, that there's very much a possibility that many more people have been exposed to this than we realize. It's very possible. But here's the thing about that. The whole mask, washing hands, it doesn't eliminate getting a viral load. It drastically reduces it. That's a very important thing. Think about it this way, okay? The reason why somebody gets sick at a different degree than somebody else, obviously there are many factors. It has to do with how strong their immune system is. It has to do with what they're eating. It has to do with the condition their body is in. There's multiple factors, but one of the things that many people don't realize is if you get sick, it has to do with how much of a viral load that you intake.
Perfect example. Okay. You and me are hanging out, right?
Yeah.
We pour a shot, not a Jack, because I won't drink that crap because I have taste. but we pour a shot, bro. Like I said, I have taste. Other people don't. we pour a shot of, say, let's say we got lucky, we got some of the Metallica blackened whiskey, right?
Sure.
We pour a shot of that. We each take a shot of that. Are you drunk?
What, me by a single shot?
Yeah.
I'll feel it in a couple of minutes, but I'm not going to be drunk. I'm not going to go driving anywhere, if that's what you're saying.
Am I drunk after a single shot?
No.
No, not with me being the fat ass that I am. A lot.
Well, again, body type, right? Makes perfect sense. Let's think about that.
But here's the thing. One shot isn't going to make us drunk.
One shot isn't going to knock us back like mad. No.
15, 20 shots, we're going to have some problems, maybe.
What the fuck are you drinking that allow you to take 15 to 20 shots before you just pass out or die?
I'm fat.
To 20 shots is a ton.
I'm fat. Fine. Seven shots.
Seven shots? You know, seven shots over a certain amount of time? Sure. We're not talking like in a row, though, because that'll fucking kill somebody. But again, this is a great example.
this is the example that can make sense to people, because everybody likes drinking.
Yeah.
Is if you have one shot, small viral load, may not do much to you. May not affect you that much.
Right.
You have seven shots, you may be seeing, you know, floor moving a little bit, and girl that normally you wouldn't have anything to do with, or a guy that normally wouldn't have anything to do with, suddenly looks super sexy. And so, you know, basically the point being, as Mike's trying to say, the less of the virus that you have able to get into your body, the less damage it can do, maybe the less sick you get, if sick at all, depending on all the other factors.
Well, that's exactly it. Let me try to simplify it in a different direction, let's say. Okay. Let's say that you get into a fist fight. Okay. And you know how to defend yourself. You let's say
which,
you're
which,
let's
which,
say you're a martial
way,
artist.
May, Which, by the way, may happen after the seven shots. I'm just saying.
Right. Now, let's say you get into a fist fight and you're a martial artist. Okay. You get into a fist fight with one person. It's pretty well known at this point. If you are a trained martial artist, if you have something, if you are built to fight and you fight one person, you're going to take them down. No sweat. Most likely. Let's say they are not also a martial artist. They're just some drunk asshole. Okay. Now, let's take that and multiply it to two people. It's going to be a little bit tougher to have to split up your workload, but both of those, let's say they're two people that are of the same size, same strength, same skill. You're going to have to split up your focus to two people that are of the same load, and they're both attacking you at the same time without regard to you or your defense. Take that and multiply it to 5. Make it 10. Make it 20. Everybody has their limit. The point that I'm getting at is that sometimes if you learn, your body is going to learn how to fight this virus. It especially will be much better at it once it develops an antibody based on how much it has. If the load is smaller, then the body will be more likely to develop an antibody to fight it. Now, that's not where I'm getting at herd immunity or whatever, but it does help you keep from getting as sick as you possibly could get, or worse. But if you're ambushed, you're overwhelmed, and your body has no clue how to fight it, you're not going to survive it, or it's going to kick your ass entirely. But there's also a possibility that if you are being safe, if you are reducing the load that you may come in contact with, your body may learn how to fight this without breaking a sweat. It's a possibility, right?
Regardless, it doesn't take much to wear a mask and to wash your hands regularly.
It's simple self-defense.
You're not being asked that much to do.
Right.
To try to help not just yourself, but to help others. And here's the thing. If you're listening to this and your thoughts are, well, I might help myself, but I don't care about others, I'm going to go on the limb here. Okay, Mike? I'm going to go on the limb here.
Okay.
Stop listening to us. Don't like any of our stuff anymore. And if you are, at least if you're a friend of mine, don't talk to me again. Because if you're that level of selfish that you're not at least somewhat worried about how you might be able to, by something so small as wearing a mask and washing your hands, something so small as that, you don't want to do that to help other people because it's too much of an inconvenience on you, then I'm sorry, you're not a person I really want to deal with, because that's not asking a lot from you. It's really, really not.
Yeah.
That's literally like asking you just to be polite to people, to not yell at your waiter, to treat people who work in customer service like human beings instead of like your slave.
Yeah.
And that's literally what we're talking about here, is just follow the health guidelines, please, and realize this is not a political issue. This is not a partisan issue. This is a public health issue for America and for the world. Let's try to be as healthy as possible, and let's not let this become something that we have to take sides on. There should only be one side, and that is for America to get better. To get to get beyond this health crisis.
Yes.
All right. If there are anybody still listening, if I just didn't drive them away, which I hope not, I think the people listening, I think that the people that would listen to us, the 30 or so that do occasionally, I think the majority of them are people that understand that there's a certain level of kindness that when you think about the fact that we have friends that are former military. And they would go into desert situations, because for some reason all the recent military encounters that the United States have been involved in have been in freaking deserts. they go into desert military stuff in soaring heat, wearing long sleeve clothing, packing 40 to 50 pound packs around with them, not including the guns that they're carrying with them. They have to wear goggles and face masks just so they can breathe with the sand whipping around everywhere.
Right.
And they have so many layers of clothing and so many pounds of extra gear that they're running around with. These are the soldiers that we are supposed to have admiration and respect for being out there and defending our country and running a whole bunch, which is what I don't want to do. They run a lot, and I I'm glad they get to do the running and I never had to. That makes me happy. But the point is, they did all of this. They've done all of this at different points, carrying all this stuff, having all this extra load, and we can't wear a mask and wash our hands. And that's just it. So, Mike, for those who are listening to us, where are they listening to us?
Well, you should be listening to us probably at the ZenioChronicles.com or ZenCron.com, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. You could also catch us on a lot of the podcast stations or podcast platforms like Spotify, Google. I think that's going away, so probably it's going to be YouTube, Apple, all that kind of stuff. Speaking of YouTube, we do have a YouTube page. Please, if you are listening to us on YouTube, like the video, subscribe, and James, what else should they do?
Click the bell.
That's right. Click that bell icon to make sure that you get notified of the next podcast that we put out. Where normally podcasts are out every Thursday. Pretty much, I think we debut them at midnight, unless I'm late putting something out, which that happens from time to time. But what can you do? Sometimes you get, sometimes a lot of stuff happens, and that's okay. But we will be out on Thursday as we normally are.
And sometimes Mike gets a text from James. Hey, dude, did you put the podcast out?
Didn't that happen like 2 weeks ago, I think? It's like, bro, where's the podcast? It's like, oh, God.
By the way, when you're on our YouTube page, check us out on YouTube. As always, go over and check out Rolling Note Music. That's Mike's music channel where he talks about all things musical, how to record stuff.
I'll be talking about that Eddie Van Halen stuff for sure on there. So
Eddie Van Halen.
Look out for the videos there.
Yeah, his attempt at Eruption, which is going to be awesome. I can't wait to see that. And after you're done with that, check out Chronosode Games. This is Mike's channel with his wife, where they are playing various video game franchises from originally was going to be in chronological order of their story, but for the month of October, they decided to take a left turn and you know, go all Halloween-y on us.
Yeah.
Which is just like, I mean, are you guys getting your pumpkin spice lattes when you need them too? I mean,
well,
seriously?
I mean, no, that's more of a Thanksgiving. That's more of a November thing for me.
You just, I don't know who you are anymore. Damn it all.
Hey, anyway, man, I can enjoy a pumpkin spice latte every once in a while. Damn it.
Here we are about the taste buds again. Some of us have them and some of us don't. Anyway, they're doing Luigi's Mansion, which I guess is appropriate for Halloween, as it's kind of a pseudo horror video game. But and I believe your wife is the one playing this one. So
she is.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So check those out, people, while you're checking out our podcast. Because why not? You're still not doing anything else. You're hopefully staying home. You're hopefully following all the protocols. Have some things to listen to, and in the case of the other two, watch, because you get to watch those. You just get to listen to us. Anyway, thank you for listening, and hopefully we'll be able to be back again next week with something a little more positive. We'll see. So thank y'all. We'll talk to you again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.